have your attention, please. Hello, everybody. I want to thank everybody for coming to our keynote presentation, and it gives me tremendous pleasure to welcome back to the podium Dr. Lowell Catlett. Many of you have heard Lowell in several times.
It's a pleasure to have him back.
Some of you have said, this is the reason you've come to this meeting, David Crowe and Lowell Catlett. And I have said for many years, in Lowell's unique presentation, that if you don't quote something Lowell has told you today for the next 2 years, I will give you a refund. Because you will be quoting Lowell Catlett somehow for the next 2 years. And his credentials are in the program. Many of you know them. He's retired from the New Mexico State University. He was head of the Department of College of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Affairs. But he is the unique viewpoint that we have had the privilege of sharing over the years on the future and the economy, and he's going to talk to us today about critical new viewpoints that are peering around the corner and what we should be paying attention to. So, Lowell Catlett.
Thank you, Bob, for that kind introduction. Usually economists don't get invited to do anything more than once other than leave the room, so thank you for letting me come back. It's always a thrill and a pleasure to be with you folks. You're very kind. You truly are the salt of the earth, doing things that matter to this society, and I've always appreciated coming back with you. But before we get started, could we thank all the sponsors? You don't put something like this on without a lot of volunteers and a lot of people. And could you thank BASF for lunch, and most importantly, all the other sponsors for making sure this happens today? And Bob was very kind. You know, if you quote me, I'm going to try to tell you if I stole something from somebody else, and you can quote them as well, but you know, I got it from somebody else. There's not a lot of new things out there, so if you quote me, you're probably quoting 40 other people, because I probably stole it from somebody else. So there's an expression at the university: if you steal from one source, it's plagiarism. If you steal from many, it's research. So I've done my research. So anyway, it's a pleasure to be with you. I truly believe, without question, it's the best time ever to be alive. It's the best time ever to be in the mulch and soil business, because there's just so many fun things. And if you don't believe it's the best time to be alive, just read a little history, okay? Because all you got to do is read a little history and you kind of go, you know what? It's a pretty nice time to be alive, folks. It's pretty interesting. But you know, it's moving so fast, folks, that I can't really sum it up on how fast it's moving. And I use the expression trying to see around the corner. And that actually stole that one from Don Kennedy. Don Kennedy was many years ago president of Stanford University, and Stanford University got in a little trouble. Ultimately, Don resigned, but someone asked him about the issue, and he said, you know, as a leader, we're supposed to be able to see around the corner. And I didn't. Okay. But in his defense, hell, folks, we can't see around the corner. We can't forecast. All we can do is try to think about trends and how they might impact our business, because it truly is moving so fast we can't keep track of it. And I gave up. And I can tell you that when I gave up trying to figure out how fast it was moving, it was 1991, 27 years ago, when my grandmother passed away. Okay, 1991, I was using a term then of 1% times your age would give you roughly the mathematical equivalent of what your lifetime has seen of all the technical and social changes that humans have produced in 6,000 years of recorded history. So when she died, she was born in 1904, okay? So she was 87. So it's kind of a guess, so I kind of rounded it, and I go, this lady has seen about 90% of everything humans have done in 6,000 years of recorded history. Think about it for just a second. She was born into a household of 1904. Folks, the household of 1904 wasn't materially different than the household of 1804. In 1904, the average American lived to be 46. You had no indoor plumbing. You had no electricity. Life was short. It was brutal. Get on with it. Okay? We didn't change the age of consent in New Mexico until Gary Carruthers became governor in 1986. We changed it from 13 to 16. 1986. Folks, when your model is you're going to live to be 46, you just better get on with it. Well, she was born in a house. Well, go back to 1804. The average, by the best numbers, average American didn't live to be about 44. Still no indoor plumbing. Still no electricity. Life was short, brutal. Hell, go back to 1704. The best numbers say about 40. No indoor plumbing. Tough. She was born into that household. Things were pretty stable. Okay. And then, bam, this woman saw what? 1904. All of a sudden, guess what? Started seeing people go from horse and buggies to cars, trucks, to airplanes, to see us take and safely bring home 12 men to the moon, antibiotics, radios, two world wars, okay, TV. Oh, this woman took to TV like crazy. She had a little needlepoint sign in her home in western Oklahoma. When you walk in, you couldn't miss it. And it said, house rules. No discussion of politics, no discussion of religion, and no discussion of whether championship wrestling is real. Because what she saw on that TV, she believed it. Okay. But you know what? She lived 87 years, and she adapted to the most phenomenal change ever. And I was about 40 at the time, and I'm thinking, I've seen about 40%. But I gave up then, because I just couldn't get a handle. Couldn't do it anymore. It's just moving so fast. But IBM, which probably understands it about as well as anybody, about 2 months ago, gave a number that kind of gives you a sense of how fast and how much things are changing. Okay? And IBM said this. Every day, 2.5 quintillion bytes, B-Y-T-E-S, of new data, information, becomes available to the world. Every day. 2.5 quintillion. Now, a byte, B-Y-T-E-S, is generally, by IEEE standards, 8 bits, or some people call those bytes too, zeros and ones. It's what a computer sees as a byte of data. You with me? A byte of data, okay? 2.5 quintillion. Now, I love numbers. Hell, I had to look it up. Well, I did what everybody did. I Googled the damn thing. What's a quintillion? Well, let's see. A billion is 1,000 million. A trillion is 1,000 billion. And a quintillion is 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, No. So I go, I'm an old country boy. How could I bring this into focus? Well, so I go, okay, I'm going to let this represent a byte, a new bit of data, the temperature in this room, this instant. You with me? That's what a computer sees, a byte of data, okay? Let it represent one, okay? And there's 2.5 quintillion of them, new ones, every day. So if you tape them together, conveniently, these are 6 inches, okay? Tape them together, two of them make a foot. You with me? Would it wrap around the equator, the widest points of our planet, 24,901 miles, about 81 miles further than the polar orbits, because we kind of were in an oblique spheroid? Okay? Would it wrap around once? This is the audience participation.
Many times.
Twice? Many times, yeah. A lot. In fact, you'll keep right now, they're kind of thin, aren't they? So I got my micrometer out and I said, okay, how thin are these things? Then I didn't trust my eyesight or my ability to read a micrometer anymore, so I Googled the damn thing. Okay. Okay. 233 of them for an inch. Okay. Would it be an inch? Wrap around the earth? Keep going. It'll be a solid wall of money. 340 miles high. Do the math. Okay. The International Space Station orbits at 258 miles on average. So start climbing the mythical ladder. After about 2 miles, you better take some oxygen because it ain't much. At 10 miles, there's no atmosphere. You'll pass the International Space Station and then have to climb another 82 miles to get to the top. And that represents 1 day's worth of new data the world gets. And tomorrow, there'll be another wall. And one estimate came out not too long ago that 40% of those bytes are for photographs, for the pixels of all the photographs that we take. Isn't it interesting, the unintended consequences? Last year in the world, 101 people died. I can't make this stuff up. From taking selfies. 101 died from taking a picture of those. Kind of reminds me of the old joke of why single men live less than married men. It's because single men are always saying, "Hold my beer and watch this." Well, let me take a picture of me doing that. So we got a lot of pixels in that, but folks, what I'm trying to tell you is, guess what? It's moving pretty fast. But the important thing about that is what Abraham Lincoln told us. Beauty of the future is, guess what? Comes one day at a time. And it's also the beauty of my grandmother, Ruby Gillen, is, guess what? You can see 90% of all the changes that humans produce, and they can be quite spectacular, and guess what? You can be successful. You just got to anticipate them and think about them in ways that you never thought before. And that's all I want you to do today, very briefly. So let me share a few of them with you. One of them is kind of one that just sneaks up on us, and it's one that's probably going to impact your businesses more than anyone. It's one of the reasons that it's good to be in the mulch and soil business, I think, because we have right now, and you never see this number, so trust me, just go to the St. Louis Federal Reserve, Google them, they're known as Fred, Google them, they calculate it more accurately and better than anybody, and they calculate at least every month the net worth of American households, okay? And on September 21st, the last time they calculated it, 126 million American households had a collective net worth, net, you understand net, you business people, okay, of how much? A lot.
$1 million.
Yeah, well, collectively for 126 million households, $106.927 trillion. Could we round that to 1.7? Collective American households are worth $107 trillion. And believe me, this is not a political statement, because what it is this. It's been pretty stable for about 100 years at about 5 on the low side, or 6 times the gross domestic product of what you produce as Americans. This year we will produce $20 trillion as a gross domestic product. So 5 times that is $100 trillion. That's been pretty stable for 100 years, folks. It's been stable through all kinds of administrations, all kinds of politics. Are you with me, folks? It's about the productivity of Americans, okay? But it's the largest it's ever been, and it's $107 trillion. The most ungodly wealth that has ever occurred. And, oh, well, there's student debt and everything else. Isn't it interesting? We just started keeping track of the FICO scores in 2005? Good God, how many ads do you see every day? Well, check your credit score for free. It won't change it. We didn't start keeping a historic record of them until 2005. And then we had the Great Recession. So what do you think's happened to credit score since then? I don't use PowerPoint, so this is down. This is up. This is, I don't know. What do you think's happened to credit score? If you listen to the news, it's like, oh. No, actually, credit scores have gone up 10% since 2005. And we're sitting on the largest net worth that's ever been recorded in history. So let me explain that to you in ways that I think are important to your businesses. Because, and the first one comes, and I'm going to do it generationally if I can, to explain that we're just missing the boat on this if we don't come to grips with these generations and their money. My mother is 91. She still lives on a ranch in the Panhandle of Texas by herself. Okay? I was with her just not too long ago, and I said, "Mom, I just looked up the longevity numbers, and the average female in America that lives to be, that's 91, lives on average almost another 5 years." And she goes, "Lowell, I am not 91. I am almost 91 and a half." Which reminded me of when I was a teenager and I wanted to be old enough to drive, so I wasn't 15, I was 15 and a half. But she's proud of living that long. She's still independent. So my father's generation, plus a little bit of them that are older than that, but grandparents, not too many of them alive, is still number 23 million in the society. 7 million of them are still employed, like my mother, on a ranch in Panhandle, Texas. Okay. When I asked her in January what was she doing, she said, "I was out breaking ice so the cattle could get water. What do you think I was doing?" I said, "Mom, you're 90 at the time." I said, "You shouldn't be doing it. I don't see you up here breaking it for me." 7 million still in the workforce. Interesting thing, of the $107 trillion net worth, they own or control 20% of it. Okay. They range in age from 72 on the young side to the oldest woman that lives in Ohio, 113. But they own 20% of that wealth, okay? 7 million of them still in the workforce, approximately 5% of the workforce. We've never in history had four generations in the workforce in the numbers that we have today. And you got to deal with all of them, okay? I love Chris trying to deal with the safety issue on the panel this morning. I mean, it's an issue, you know, especially on my mother, you know? Because when I said to her after that, I said to her, "Mom, how's your macular degeneration?" She goes, "Oh, Lord, I'm essentially blind. You know, this one eye, it's just gray and it's just fuzzy all around it. And this other one's got a big black spot and I can see kind of out of the side of it. And Lord, I just had to quit driving at night." "Mom, tell me, when you're going to the grocery store, I ain't going to be here." What I'm trying to tell you is, folks, we have to, we must redefine what getting old is. Okay? Because Chris said it very eloquently this morning. Is Chris here? Chris said it very eloquently this morning when you said, "I'm 65, and just a few years ago I'd been considered an outlier, wouldn't you?" And guess what? Now you got people like my mother who's still independent, wants to ranch, still wants to drive, probably shouldn't. But guess what? She's always been a gardener. But she doesn't rototill anymore. She went to a few years ago to raise beds. And then I finally talked her into getting an automatic system that waters so she wouldn't have to water. Now she doesn't do raised beds anymore. They're too complicated. But she does do pots. And she needs waters. And she needs your business. Are you with me, folks? We have to redefine what old is and how we treat old people. If it's as simple as, please, for God's sakes, get the writing on your packages a little bit bigger. Okay, now let's go to my generation, baby boomers, okay? We lost something last year. We used to be 82 million strong. We used to be number one in the labor force. And we got kicked to number two, didn't we? Because the millennials took over. Because guess what, folks? My generation, baby boomers, we're currently retiring at the rate of 10,000 a day. And we're dying at the rate of 10,000 a day. And we have not reached our peak dying years. That's going to occur in about 2024. So as a good rule of thumb, folks, at the end of this year, beginning next year, you start adding 11,000. It'll be about 1,000 a day. 11,000 a day that will die. And then you can add another 1,000 each year until about 2024. And then you can take 1,000 away as it hits it. Are you with me, folks? And then in about 19 years, we, for all intents and purposes, will be dead and gone. Okay? But, folks, we control 60% of the $107 trillion. Okay? And we're weird as hell. So you're going to see in the next few years, because in 20 years, we're, for all intents and purposes, dead. Okay, we're going to change. So the National Board of Realtors says this, though, about my generation. We do control a lot of wealth, 60% of $107 trillion, and 40% of that is in real property, folks. It's in equipment. It's in real estate. Are you with me? Going to see the largest intergenerational transfer. But the National Board of Realtors says 60% of us in the next 5 years are going to move from where we are. Where are we going to move to? Well, we don't know. Some of us are moving out of what we call convenience centers, a.k.a. old folks' homes. But be smart about it. They're not the old folks' home of the other. They're convenience centers. We want a lot of convenience. Okay? Fastest growth right now are not in golf course-based homes, but in what? Farm-based housing developments. Got 300-plus fastest-growing, faster-growing than golf courses as the center. Because they want a farm in the center. And then they want their home, and so they can be part of a community garden. Ride my horse over or something. I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying, we're going to move. Where are we going to move to? My God, make them attractive to us. Good God, we control the greatest wealth that's ever happened. We'll buy them. Build them. We'll come. Okay. So we're doing that. Where else are we going? We don't know. You know, we're changing everything about it. But folks, we do know this. 75% of us say we want to move to places. That'll be when we're leaving. We want to move to places that have plants and animals. Got to maintain them because we want to be around plants and animals. And the majority of us say we want to be around them, but we want somebody to help us with them. We may not want to manage them. I may want to move to those convenience centers and take a horse, but I want you to take care of the horse. Or let me rent it. Or the new buzzword among my generation for homes and for horses is fractional ownership. Like just the feet. Or whatever. Are you with me, folks? Okay. Get ready for this generation, folks. We lost out, okay? But we do want plants and animals. We want to be around these things. Here comes the next generation, though. The Xers, and these were the generation born. Demography's not a science, okay? So we kind of, but the Xers were born somewhere probably mid-60s, early 60s to early mid-80s. You with me? Smallest generation ever. Some of you in that group, okay? Smallest generation ever. Only 44 million. You're half of us. But you've never known unemployment. Because you've always been half of us. So we retire at 10,000 a day, pretty quick, kicking up to 11,000, 12,000 a day. You're going to replace us with, you're not going to replace us with the Xers. Hell, they're all fully employed. And they are the best paid generation at this point in their career of anybody. They are so cash rich, they're building their McMansions, toys like crazy. They're the ones that go to rural America and build big homes. They still love suburbs, but they want 5 acres, riding trails for horses, leashless dog park. We have more horses in America today than 110 years ago when we were a horse-powered society. They used to pull us and our freight up and down the roads. Hell, we pull them up and down the roads. How wrong or right? It's just that generation is embracing all kinds of changes, folks. And so I'm not going to spend much time on them. They're the most cash-rich generation ever. And you just, if you want them, you're going to pay for them because guess what? You already have. Okay, highest paid generation ever. The generation, though, that I want to spend some time with just a second for you, because it does impact you, is this millennial generation, the Yers, as we call them. They're about 75 million. They're big. So they're now number one in the labor force. Okay. Number one in the labor force. Let me tell you some numbers from the National Board of Realtors. They're buying their first houses. They're shunning homes built in the 70s and the 80s. They don't like them. They want old homes built prior to 1960 in established neighborhoods with yards and trees and flowers. They want those. And they like urban, but they're shunning the suburbs like crazy. So they've coined a new word. They call it Sub-band. A combination of urban and suburbia. Somewhere in between, okay? Some people call them 18-hour cities, okay? They're housing developments, but they also have a rich, they were smart enough to build a rich portion of it in retail. So these people can move to them, but still have access to what? Entertainment, restaurants, something like that. Some people call them the 18-hour cities, okay? But they're not suburbia, and they're not urban. They're somewhere in between. And they're also the ones that are changing, and I coined the term, I call it Ruban. Same thing with rural and urban. They want something. They want entertainment. They want restaurants. They want it quick and easy. And they'll live in rural America, but that rural America better be close to those, okay? We're seeing the blurring of what is urban and rural like crazy, and they're the ones that are driving it, okay? And the National Board of Realtors basically says they like older houses, and they like houses that give them some access, whether they be rural or whether they be in an 18-hour city, but they're shunning suburbia like crazy. They don't want it, okay? Extras have those locked up anyway. But here's the thing about them, okay? And this is, I think it's important to them because we're seeing it. They're the generation that is used to having total access to mobility, okay? So they research the hell out of everything, okay? If you tell them, this mulch will retain 30% more water, guess what? They ain't taking your word for it. They're going to do what? They're going to Google it, and they'll Google it, and they'll re-Google it, and they'll do it, and they're going to, they research the hell out of everything. What CD rate are you getting? I have no idea. Well, they know. They know. They research the hell out of everything. But they're the first generation that in mass, once they've researched it, embrace professional people helping them make a decision. The National Board of Realtors did the research on it because they found out, guess what? They want to take a virtual tour. They want to see it. They want to know. They're going to research the hell out of that house. Everything about it. And then they trust a person, a realtor, to help guide them through the process. We're seeing in agriculture this first generation that really enjoys it, have no problem paying for a crop scientist or somebody telling them and giving them advice on how much should be applied and how much should be not. And you've got to be seeing it in golf courses and other areas as well. They will research the hell out of it, but then they want a person to help them make the decision. Here comes the more interesting one. And I love that generation. I just love them. I just love them. They're just so different. Okay, and please, folks, they are not the me generation. Okay? They get accused of being me. No, my generation was the first me generation. We're the probably ones that protested on college campuses, smoked dope, did drugs. Hell, we still do drugs. Okay, except it's Prozac and Metamucil, but we're still doing drugs. Okay. They're not the me generation. Here's, though, some frame of references for you. And Ericsson, the big IT company, did the research on it. Let me just share some of them with you. 60% of that generation fully says this. They believe that the current job that they hold, 60%, well, just damn near two-thirds of them, 60% fully believe in the near future. Near is not defined, but you can define it however you want to. In the near future, their job will be replaced by a robot. 60% fully believe in the near future what they're doing today is going to be done by a robot. Where my generation writes books about it and we go, oh, you know, the robots, we don't know what the jobs are. You know what they say? Yeah, we think the robot's going to take over our job. We want to own it and derive an income from it and maybe two or three more. Totally different from my generation. You go, robots would take all the jobs. They're going, I want to own the damn thing. And maybe five more. And they want to get paid for it. Pretty good generation, folks. Guess what? They're going to be really pushing the curve on robotics. And we are robotic. We'll get to that in just a minute. Okay? But they want to own it. Okay? Here's an interesting one, too. One-third of them say this. They fully believe that it's okay if they don't have a job at all. As long as it doesn't impact their lifestyle. Well, duh! When I read that one, I'm going, well, hell, who wouldn't? Well, guess what? We wouldn't. Baby boomers. My parents gave me a set of luggage when I graduated from high school. At the time, I was real proud of it, and then I thought, what in the hell are they telling me? Get the hell out of here! Go get a job! Okay? And I'd like to, over time, said, man, I've been happy to just not have a job. But I simply couldn't be comfortable with that because it wasn't in my mindset. Furthermore, until my dad passed away, he would have kicked my ass. And I knew it. Okay? We just could not do that. But that generation says fully one-third. And the extras for that matter. It's okay not to have a job as long as their lifestyle doesn't change. Okay? I'm not saying that against them. I'm just saying it took a mindset for them to understand, guess what? Okay? Folks, they grew up in the most affluent period ever in the history of the world. We came in on the back of my parents' generation and went through the Great Depression and World War II. Different mindsets. We couldn't be comfortable doing it. They're comfortable doing it, okay? Not wrong or right, because the final thing on it in that survey, 49%, and God, I hate odd numbers like that, because it was a survey, and I've done enough surveys, so I'm rounding it to 50%. But if you Google the Erickson study, the actual number is 49. But I'm rounding it to 50, okay? One half of them say they believe in a universal basic income. I'm an economist, folks. When I read that, I'm going, what friggin' planet are they living on? And then I have to go eat those words and look it up and find out, guess what? A universal basic income is not a left-leaning thing. It is as much embraced, and in many cases more embraced, by the right. Richard Nixon, until he resigned, was doing his best to implement it. George Herbert Walker Bush voted for it. Two very conservative people, Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, both when they had government jobs, did pilot programs on giving people basic money for the sustenance of life, not tied to their work or their other status in life. And they were both happy with the results. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying you've got now half of a generation that's now the majority in the workforce that believe that there's a basic right to a certain amount of income for everybody. As an economist, all I can say is that's why I drink. I don't understand it, so I'm not making it wrong or right, okay? But let me share a couple more trends with you real quick, okay? Because right on the heels of that, and I call it the wealth effect because it truly changes people's ideologies, okay? And where we're headed. And I think the changing in the real estate is offering so many phenomenal opportunities for you folks to embrace each segment of those things in a different way that you can make a whole bunch of money off of, okay? But here comes one that I think as a business you need to at least be aware of. And I don't know about you, but the first science class I got, I was, it was probably in junior high, but about 1960, I remember the teacher coming in saying this, at current rates of consumption of gasoline, by 1980, there will be no gasoline left in the world. And I'm thinking, I don't even have my driver's license. There ain't no any gasoline. And since 1960, what's happened to fossil fuel consumption? What's happened to the proven known reserves of fossil fuel? Folks, at $10 a barrel, you find it where it bubbles out of the ground in Texas. At $100 a barrel, you find the stuff in North Dakota. We have never been blessed with so much fossil fuel. Yet, it's the beginning of the end. And you got to be aware of it. Okay? Got to think about it. Because there's some business opportunities like crazy for you. In economics and in biology, certainly, we use something called the S-curve. Things increase at an increasing rate. And then they hit an inflection point, and then they do what? They continue to increase, but now at a decreasing rate. And then they level off or fall off, are you with me? With fossil fuel, we're in that, it's still increasing. But at what? A decreasing rate. And the question, of course, is where will it start peaking and falling off? We don't know. I'm a baby boomer, as I said. Before my generation is dead, I think fossil fuels will still be a major fuel source. I'm not predicting them ending anytime soon. I'm not telling you. Okay? I'm just saying get ready, because they're in that area and there's some fundamental changes going on. If you doubt that S-curve, folks, we discovered streptomycin in 1943. We did not use it to cure, and it truly was a cure for tuberculosis till 1949. And if you have a relative that was cured from tuberculosis, you understand the power of it. I'm not taking that away, but I am telling you this. We discovered it in 1943, but by the time we discovered it and used it, tuberculosis cases in the United States had already done what? It had already fallen off. We discovered the AIDS virus in 1981. We do not have a cure for it. We have some good treatments for AIDS, but I guarantee you, folks, where's AIDS? It's already fallen off. We don't have a cure for it. So the S-curve for fossil fuels is, its days are numbered. I don't know when that's going to happen, because we have some phenomenal things going on, folks. Let me tell you about them, okay? April 21st last year, England, for the first time in 135 years since 1882, generated all of its electricity from non-fossil fuels. They said by 2025 they would no longer generate electricity by fossil fuels. They beat it on September 21st last year. France says in 2025 they will no longer generate any electricity by fossil fuels. They say they will make it by 2020. Okay. Both countries have said by 2040 internal combustion engines will be totally banned in both countries. Okay. They will not be allowed to be sold. General Motors said in the near future, and they used the Financial Times to report it, and they were wise. They said in the near future, which you can say is whatever the hell you want to, that they would no longer manufacture internal combustion engines. Okay. I grew up in a state, Texas, the largest producer of fossil fuels of any state, by a big margin. Okay. And Luminant, their largest utility last year, said this. They will, they scuttered three of their five coal-fired power generating facilities and will get rid of the other two very quickly. And they are moving as fast as they can to wind and solar. In the state that has the largest fossil fuel base of any state on the planet, the largest utility is now moving to, because they're greenies? No, because of economics. Okay. Install capacity is reported by the Dallas Times. I will tell you the numbers because they are staggering. Wind, one half the price of natural gas, one fifth the price of coal, two thirds the price of solar, two thirds the price of natural gas, one half the price of coal. Oh, and recently, solar, as you well know, those of you that follow it, it's now one half the price of installed natural gas. The strides that have been made on solar in the last few 2 years staggers the imagination. I grew up in the Panhandle of Texas, if anybody knows, and have driven along I-40. I guarantee you can't drive from the New Mexico line or the Oklahoma line and not see what? Large wind generators, okay? Texas generates 15% of its electricity now totally by wind. Nationally, we do 10%. Iowa is the highest at 37%, okay? Installed capacity now for the five states that are installing solar faster than anywhere are in states that said that there isn't enough sunlight. Mississippi, Alabama, are you with me, folks? They get a lot of clouds and a lot of rain. Guess what, folks? The numbers are staggering the imagination, okay? Because, and the problem, of course, with wind and solar is what? If it ain't windy, which it always is in the Panhandle of Texas, but if it ain't windy and the sun ain't shining, guess what? Well, what's happened to battery capacities and stuff? 9% efficiency every year for the last decade. And 3 days ago, major announcement to the world in a new flow battery. This is not a laboratory basis, a new flow battery that's been around for a long time. You store energy in a liquid, not in a solid or in a gel like in a lithium ion. You store it in a liquid. All you got to do is just change the size of the tank that's been around for a while. So now we have a solar cell that also you can scale up immediately with a flow battery. Elon Musk won a bet for Australia when he installed and said, I can install the world's largest battery with your wind generation facility and I can do it in 6 months or it will be free. And Folks, battery is just blowing the doors off of everything, so guess what? So all what I'm trying to tell you about utilities and about energy, especially about electricity, is what's occurring. And the smart ones call it 3D. They call it first and foremost, we're decentralizing, so big power plants, out of the picture, folks. We're decentralizing, okay? We're decarbonizing, okay? And we're digitizing, okay? And when you have all that going on board, guess what? You start seeing, mostly when you decentralize, and the solar is doing what it's doing, then guess what? Your business becomes not only what? A place that absorbs and uses electricity, but also a place that what? Produces it, okay? And as you move rapidly to electric cars, guess what the smart systems do? Because Microsoft did this in Hawaii with what they call the hot water battery test. And they took over 400 households and they just said, we're going to just look at your usage and we're going to do this. We're going to store and create with electricity more hot water than you need during these periods of time, and then you can draw it down, and then we'll move it around. And guess what happened to the efficiency just with a little simple algorithm on hooking those batteries together? Well, guess what, folks? When you got electric cars sitting there in your parking lot for your workers, they're plugged in, getting recharged, and also what? With a smart grid, they're also what? They're also electricity being pulled out of those batteries, going where? Going wherever. Are you with me, folks? What I'm trying to tell you is businesses, get ready. You're going to revamp. And you're going to redo it in ways that you never dreamed possible. Many of them will be money for you, okay? Because we are truly decentralizing, decarbonizing, and digitizing, okay? Because I guarantee you, when you got a new digital breaker, and there's only less than 5% of that digital breaker in your home is the brains of the home or your business, if you'll put it in, because it counts the revolutions in your air conditioning pump or in anything else. So, folks, get ready for a plethora of data and information, but we're becoming electric. And if you ought to see the new movement to New York City when we move to electric cars that are autonomously driven, you won't recognize what the planners want to do, because there's no more high dollar real estate used for parking garages and big thoroughfares, because if you can manage traffic flows with smart algorithms, as Dale eloquently told you about the information he got on the trucks, can you imagine scale that up for cars? So let me leave you then. I haven't told you anything weird, so let me leave you with some technologies, okay? If you take this riser, okay, and lob it off at about 3 feet, if you can visualize that, about this width, about a foot thick, okay? Can you visualize that? That was the computer we used for the Apollo moon program, okay? When we safely took and landed Neil Armstrong to be the first man and Buzz Aldrin to be the second one in July of 1969, safely took them to the moon, okay, brought them home. We subsequently landed 10 more, the final one to walk on the moon, who last year died, Gene Cernan at 82 in January, the last man to walk on the moon. We safely took, brought home 12 men to the moon. We safely took and brought home 24 men to the moon and let them orbit, including the ill-fated Apollo 13. Remember, we had to engineer the hell out of Apollo 13 when the fuel cell exploded. If you saw the movie, you talk to the astronauts as I have, and they go, real as hell, folks. But when that thing exploded, we had to do what? Had to engineer the hell out of that, loop them back around the moon, get them in the limb that wasn't designed to maintain them, and we got them home. That was the computer that did it. Pretty damn good. And my galaxy. It's not a 7, so you don't have to back up. So. 32 million times more powerful. What? It's like 2.5 quintillion bytes of information. It's unfathomable. What you have to take away from it is this. Don't listen to anything you read, even in the science journals. For all intents and purposes, and in your lifetime, even the youngest of you, computer capacity and speed is infinite. Get over it. We can store data and move it around. It's infinite. And its speed is overwhelming. Get over it. What are you going to do in an infinite digital world? Okay? Well, the first thing we did that everybody just kind of said isn't going to happen, well, I guarantee you, I've talked about it forever. Robots are blowing the doors off of everything. Okay? When you have infinite capacity, get ready. International Federation of Robotics says this: last year we put 250,000 commercial industrial robots into place. That was more than existed 5 years ago. More venture capital flowed into agriculture last year for one application of a robotic than has flowed into agriculture in the last 20 years, and it was for a robot that will pick our number one fruit, apples. It attracted $400 million in venture capital because we're that close. Okay? Robotics blow the doors off of everything, folks. Okay? So, here you got one. Let's call it Flippy. Already 7 fast food chains in California use it. Flips hamburgers. You change the utensil and it takes the fries out. Okay? Baxter, using technology from Disney Research, has a robotic hand that is so sensitive it can tell a ripe peach from an unripe peach. You let it feel what a ripe peach feels like, let it put it in a basket, let it feel what an unripe peach feels like, put it in a basket. It's got neural networks, it learns. You only have to do it once. And it's user friendly. You sit next to it. The problem with all the robotics are what? If you get too close to them, you're afraid it's going to grab you and weld your leg to a fender. But I guarantee you, when robotics come on board, get ready, because you're going to have safety talks about how people work with robotics. Because Baxter's user-friendly, but some of them aren't. But SoftBank just installed Pepper in an all-retail store for electronics in Japan last year. No humans. 7 clerks. Pepper understands the emotions of anger, happiness, sad, do you like me, are you upset? So many emotions that we can't categorize them. It understands them, okay? And when people go in the store, they react to Pepper. There's 7 of them. And the research says, what do you think people say when they come out? Do they like them or dislike them? They like them a lot. But see, it's not just in that store. There's 10,000 Peppers already working in Japan, primarily in healthcare, because Pepper does most of the help for people that are incapacitated and need to go to the bathroom or need help in assisted care facilities. And all of the people there say, what? Oh, give me Pepper, don't give me a human. Pepper knows that I can't lay on this side. They remember it. Get ready, folks. It's blowing. The fastest growth in agriculture are robotic milkers. Talk to them. Guess what happens to the productivity of the cow with a robotic milker? Guess when a human comes? Cattle see humans as predators. We just did the biology on it. We're predators. I don't care how much they like you. You're a predator. The robot. What the hell? Folks, it's blowing the doors off of every business, the robotics. And go back to what Dale said. Someone asked him about autonomous vehicles. I think Dale answered it as perfectly as anybody could. We're a ways away, okay? And the trucking industry's been targeted, hasn't it, Dale? You know, 1.8 million truck drivers at least, and they say, well, guess what? As the autonomous things that you're doing with trucks, and you're going to like them, I guarantee you, because get ready for them, folks. Because anybody that's a baby boomer, remember we had 14 miles in a highway in the 1970s, and we poured millions of dollars in it for autonomous vehicles, and then at the end of it, this is why you never forecast, after millions of dollars, they came back and said, we will never have a car that drives itself. No. And then we invented LIDAR and digital cameras, and both Ford and General Motors said, in 2020, they will sell you a fully autonomous car. Last time I checked, that ain't far away. And I guarantee, folks, I don't care how much it costs. I will take a second mortgage on my house. I'm buying one. Because I'm tired of being the damn designated driver. I want my wife and I to go to a restaurant, drink to oblivion, get in the car and say, take me home. No, wait a minute. Stop at my favorite liquor store, then take me home. But I visited, and Dale, that's why I say Dale was very eloquent about it and what he said. We got to adjust all of this, okay, and get ready for it. And as I visited with an insurance company executive that I trust, is very, and they literally insured millions of cars. I said to him, I said, what are you guys doing about autonomous vehicles? And he said, well, funny thing, you mentioned it. I was just with the president of Ford and General Motors, and they said that they're really, the scenarios they're working out is basically this, that they think that basically they're just going to own the cars and sell them and lease them to you, not in a lease fashion, but they're going to move to a model. And they said that they don't necessarily want this. They just think it's a scenario that will fall out, that transportation will now not be about ownership, but about a subscription. Oh, if you don't believe that, in certain dealerships right now in America, for Cadillac, you can do the model. For $500 fee up front, just to get the riffraff out, and then $3,000 a month, they will let you pick every month a new Cadillac to drive, no questions asked. Insurance, licensing, everything's covered. Porsche not to be outdone, said $5,000 up front, $5,000 a month, pick between two models. You're moving to a model of what? I want a car. I'm a baby boomer. I want a car. I want freedom. And what's the millennial generation? They want to go somewhere. They don't want to give a rip. They're very happy with life. I'll just Uber it. Somebody will take me there. No wrong or right. I'm not making fun of it. They're very comfortable with it. We're getting adjustments, but guess what? I think my 91-year-old mom with macular degeneration will embrace an autonomous car, what do you think? In fact, we've already done the studies. The elderly and the infirm are probably going to be the first big users of them. Phenomenal, folks. But I haven't told you anything weird, so let me leave you with a couple of weird things out of there. When you have infinite computer capacity, here comes the biggest thing that's coming down the pike. And we do spend more than any country on healthcare. But get ready, folks. We've already got now technologies on breakthroughs on instant blood tests that can test things that are so many. And it's a little lens on your phone. You just prick your finger, do it. It's instant and it's powerful. And it's blowing the doors off of healthcare. But more importantly, what we're doing now, and Google did it, was just 300,000 records, just 300,000. And they said, by looking at you, can we tell, because the 300,000 were longevity records, so they went back on people, can we tell by looking at your face whether you will be prone to having heart disease later in your life? They compared that, just facial recognition, will you have heart disease later in life, because they had the longevity records. So they knew. And then they compared it with medical doctors that use a technology called SCORE, to do the same thing, but they have to have a blood test. And there was no statistical difference. It was just 300,000 records. What do you think when they get 3 million records? What we're moving rapidly toward is something called telemedicine. And it takes care of about 15% in rural populations. And I guarantee you, when 144 companies that represent 15 million people last year said they're going to put a telepresence or telemedicine operation in their business and make it available to all their workers. So you will have a place to go, or you can use this and you can talk to a doctor. And guess what? We found on the accuracy of a telediagnosis versus a real diagnosis. Talk to the American Telemedicine Association and they'll give you the numbers that I have. Guess what? No statistical difference. In fact, there's better diagnostics with these. Already using them in agriculture, fastest growth now for telepresence. I used to think I was pretty good as a pen rider, looking at those cattle in the feed yard and saying, well, that one's kind of sick. 24-hour surveillance, what do you think's happening to the health care of all of our animals now? 24 hours, guess what? Pick it up quicker than a human can, by far. And we've already done it now for 2,000 rare genetic diseases. Look at your face, 98% accuracy on whether you have the disease or not. Get ready for those facial recognition, blow the doors off. And if someone said to me the other day, and I'll leave you with this one, Well, who in the hell would be a doctor on telemedicine for somebody out in the Hitherlands at 2 in the morning? Who do you think would do that? My generation? Eh. That's French for no. In fact, they coined a term for it. It's called the gig economy. Who's happy to work from 2 in the morning as a medical doctor doing telemedicine diagnostics for somebody? Who's happy doing that? The millennials. Because as one told me, and a medical doctor too, fresh out of med school, he said, I do the gig economy from 2 to 6 in the morning because he lives in Colorado, and he says, because I like to ski. And I do the gig economy. And I said, are you getting wealthy? And he said, that's not the point. The point is I live where I want to, do what I want to, and I make a comfortable living. They're very happy not making the most that a doctor made in our world. Okay? Which moves us then to where I started. I'm moving so fast that I will say this to you. The generation has been born, they're alive today, where degrees will not matter. I'm not telling you education's unimportant. I'm telling you degrees will not matter in a world that's moving this fast. Just by the time Dale gets a certification in place for a truck driver, what it is, I guarantee you what?
Obsolete.
Get ready, folks. We're turning education absolutely 100% on its ear. But wait a minute. The generation that hired on degrees alone was baby boomers. My father's generation, less than 10% graduated from high school. 3% went to college. That generation was about what? Can you work? Can you learn? Can you be productive? What I'm trying to tell you is, guess what? We're re-entering that world. And it's what they call eternal newbies. Meaning, guess what? As soon as I learn something, what? I got to learn something else. Best time ever to be alive. Best time ever to be in Molson soil, because, man, folks, we're turning our living standards on their end. And if you don't think the decarbonization of the utilities affects you, understand the millennials. It's a green, green, green world. And that's you. Thanks for letting me come back. I appreciate it. There's time for a few comments or questions. God, I know I got a lot of hot air. I'm hot as hell. Are you both hot as hell? Anyway, time for a few questions, comments. They don't have to be questions. They can be comments. I know I'm crazy as a loon, but anyway. Any questions or comments? You ready to get the hell where it's a little cooler, aren't you? Thanks again, folks. I'll let you appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, and BASF, our sponsor, we couldn't do that without BASF support, Colorbotics. Thank you again to our sponsor. Hello? Okay, 2 o'clock. We're going to start our sessions up in the main hall over in the hotel where we've been all this time. So you've got till 2 o'clock to find your way back next door.